Hey everyone, we are live, pal. Unfortunately for this show, Andrew Zarian is busy, so you're going to miss his handsome face, you're going to miss his charming personality, but we do have a co-host who I'm going to introduce here in a second. But before that, what I want to mention right at the top is the We're Live, Pal audio feed, which is on the F4W Online website, is now free. It is no longer behind the paywall. Now, you should still have a subscription to the website. It's the best wrestling website out there. But you can now search for We're Live, Pal anywhere that you listen to podcasts, and it will come up, and it's not behind the paywall. So definitely subscribe. We're gonna, we're gonna be doing some stuff with the marketing of this show, and that is going to help us branch out and get this show out there. So let me introduce right now the man who will be co-hosting with me. I don't know, Ian. Are you don't have the same hair as Andrew for one, but how you doing, man?
This is not as pretty as Andrew's, but I am here. I am live, pal. But I'm happy to be on for sure.
And digging the shirt already, can read the Owen Hart. Yeah. Getting ready for this weekend for Double or Nothing.
Oh, for sure. And yesterday was the anniversary of Owen's death too.
Yes. It's insane, because I think most wrestling fans remember where they were when they heard the news, or if they watched live, because I was watching live and just going, this can't be real. What's going on here?
That's what I said too. I remember back May 23rd, 1999, the Over the Edge pay-per-view. Remember exactly where I was. I was at my friend's house. And I remember there was this feeling of you didn't know if it was real or not. And then when Jim Ross came on and said that Owen had died, that felt very real. And that's where it really hit home for me.
Ian is a writer for the website. You have read his work if you have read the website. But we'll come back to Ian and we'll do a little bit of a get to know Ian segment after our first guest. If you have been around this website for many, many, many years, and I go back to, I believe, 2005 with F4WOnline.com, you know who this person is. Ed in San Antonio, what is going on?
Oh, not too much. Just looking like Captain Caveman, because I'm an idiot and I thought I booked a hair and beard trim for today, and apparently it was for Thursday, which I'll be in Vegas. But luckily our good friend Carla has hooked me up and told me exactly who to call to get this taken care of. So for the most part at the convention, I won't look like a terrorist.
Carla Duran is who Ed is talking about. Carla and I are sitting together for Double or Nothing. So that's going to be fun. I can't wait to see her. Okay, so let's talk about first, we're going to talk about your show here in a second, but the F4W convention, can you, for the folks who maybe are new to this thing, can you give me the origin story of when you asked Brian and Vinny if they wanted to hit up Vegas?
Yeah, basically I go to Vegas every year and I would go with different friends, but most of my friends are married, so they can go once, but their wives or family are going to let them go twice. So I was going to go with these two kids that at my work at UPS. They were 18 when they started, so they heard my stories for a few years, and I told them if they wanted to go, sorry, my dogs are barking, that when they turned 21, we'd go hang out and party in Vegas, and they were all down for it. And then few months before, they one's girlfriend told him no, and then the other one just kind of backed out. And I had already had all this money saved because I was going to treat them to the whole thing. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? Who am I going to go with? I can't trust myself to go by myself. I've spent too much money at strip clubs in Vegas when I've gone by myself, so it's not a good thing. So, I was listening to Brian and Vinny's show back in the day, and they would do shout outs back in the day. So I sent out a shout out and I invited them to Vegas. And I didn't know Vinny because, I mainly just knew Brian and Dave from Wrestling Observer Live. And but I invited both of them. And at the time, Vinny on the show was all, yes, yes, yes. And then he was kind of, I guess he kind of had second thoughts, but Brian's like, no, this guy's cool, we'll do it. And then so we had it scheduled, and then there was an Australian member of the website who was touring the country by train and staying in hostels, and he asked if he could meet up with us in Vegas, and I was like, well, sure. And at the time, Mike Sawyer was living in Vegas. That same week, Brian Fritz from Between the Ropes back in the day, he was doing an interview with Brian, and he's like, yeah, I heard you're going to Vegas. And I like to go to Vegas. And Brian's like, well, you know, it's someone's taking us. I don't know. And then I listened to that show. So I'm emailed Fritz, and I'm like, hey, buddy, I got a room to all to myself. You're welcome to stay in that if you really want to come out there. So he came out there, and the five of us had the first ever Vegas convention. And a lot of crazy stories from there. a lot of crazy audio. Apparently, me threatening to kick Dave Meltzer's ass. And
well, there's the famous photo, which I wish I would have asked you for, which is the one with you wearing the orange cone on your head. Was that the same year?
Yeah. That was the shit we went to, because we went to this crazy MMA show where it was just like insane. Dudes were falling out of the ring. It was crazy. And then Sawyer had a limo pick us up and take us to, at the time, Rick's Cabaret.
Uh-huh.
And within an hour, I was already blacked out drunk.
Oh, my
and getting hundreds of dollars worth of lap dances from this very beautiful, tiny Asian stripper named Ty. And we had wandered off to the VIP, and after a while, Sawyer and Alvarez were like, it's kind of expensive up there. I don't think he has that much money. So they went up looking for me, and they say the elevator door opened up, and apparently a 90-pound stripper is holding my fat ass up, and I got my wallet in my hands, and all I can say is, guys, I fucked up. I need help. And they had to go to the ATMs and pay $200 that I had overcharged dances with the stripper.
Oh, my goodness.
And then
can people attending the convention this year, can they expect a similar experience to what we had that year?
I think we've brought it a little down from the shenanigans from that standpoint.
Yeah, I got a lot going on, so it's hard for me to get like that, but I'm sure Junior Horseman, our friend Junior Horseman Justin, will at some point be passed out drunk. So that's usually his MO. But they drug me out of the strip club. And apparently I was screaming and yelling, like I say, cutting a promo on Dave Meltzer, cutting a promo on Anchor. And it's funny, though, because before this trip, everybody on the website hated me. They thought I was trying to buy my friendship with Brian and Vinny, and I was a stalker, all this bullshit. And then they recorded these videos, and then everybody loved me, and I made a big baby face, which didn't last very long, but, you know. But it caused people to want to come, and the next year we had about 16 people, and we met Dave Meltzer for the first time. He showed up to dinner because it was during like a UFC event, and him
so
and
what,
Brian.
So what
were
year? Meeting. What year was this first one?
It was the year Benoit killed his family. So
2007. That's how you remember the date. Is
yeah, because it was that weekend.
Yeah. Okay. So I would have went. I would have gone the second year, but I was in Vegas because I think I was at like a bachelor party or something with family, and so I came over just to say hi to folks. But I think then the following year, so maybe it was year three where I started going, and it's been a blast. So first, major props to Ed for kind of creating this annual event that we had to put on pause because of the pandemic. But what you've also done is now you've added a wrestling show to this weekend. So talk about the Poder show. Talk about who's in some of the main matches and what people should expect to see if they're in Vegas this weekend heading to the Poder show.
Yeah, we are a part of the Full Tilt weekend. There's like a lot of other shows going on that weekend. We're at the Silver Nugget, and we are doing the show probably a little bit after noon, even though we're advertised for noon. We're going basically as soon as we get everybody out of the Meltzer Q&A, then we're starting the show. And it's not as easy as you think, or I don't know if people would think running a wrestling show is easy. It's not. It's actually extremely hard. But it's something I like doing and something I've been trying to do, and hopefully I can get it to work and maybe one day make some money off of it. But yeah, we're doing Poder. It's Poder Cuatro. It's the fourth Poder show. And it'll be headlined by the main event for the Poder Heavyweight Poder Championship between the Lucha Baddie, Miranda Alizé. And the challenger is the Brazilian Wonder Woman, Christy James. And they're going to have a 2 out of 3 lucha style match for the championship. And that should be awesome. Then the semi-main event is the returning to wrestling Debbie Malenko from the old All Japan Women's Era. And she will be taking on 33 years junior Billy Starks. That must be one of the biggest age comparisons in the history of pro wrestling, I'm guessing. Maybe. Other matches include Viva Vaughn, who's been making a big name for herself in the West Coast. And she'll be taking on the Pink Dream, Alex Gracia. And other matches include Brittany Blake, who's been on most of my shows, and she'll be taking on Maddie Winkowski, who's been making a name for herself in Texas. And we'll have Brian Thorne, who's another Arizona Vegas wrestler who's coming up, and she'll be taking on Veda Scott, the old Wiley veteran Veda Scott.
Oh, there we go.
And then we got someone you know and is like good friends with your buddy John, Ruby Reyes, and her buddy Savannah Stone. And
she's really cool. She's a really nice person.
Well, she's awesome, but she'll kick your ass. She kind of scares me.
The only thing I'm not a fan of her about is I think she's a Dodgers fan. So that's our only beef. But otherwise, she's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's a surfer and. She's really cool. Her and Savannah Stone have an open challenge to any guys who have the balls to show up and fight them at the show. And then we got a couple.
Get in there, Garrett, if she's a Dodgers fan.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, come on. Stick Garrett up for your team.
I keep the distance, man. I'm getting too old.
I like to have competitive matches, and that would be a squash, unfortunately.
Of course. I would put her over in 10s. I would be SD Jones in that match for sure.
Yeah, and then I'll have an appearance by Jenny Santana, the daughter of WWE Hall of Famer Tito Santana. Yeah. And I think I got everything. So we'll have about eight or nine matches, and it's going to be a good show. I give them time to wrestle. I don't do any real bullshit. You know, you're not going to be there for 5 hours like you probably will be for the GCW show later that night.
Are you saying you're not going to put them in the ring and then there's going to be 9 minutes of video packages like on Raw and then they're still waiting to start their match? That's not what
I don't got that kind of, I don't got that kind of money for production.
Last sell here. What are fans going to be expected to see when they attend a Ned in San Antonio Productions event?
Just some straight ass wrestling, no bullshit. You give these women are going to have time to show what they can do, and then that 2 minutes, and just shake their butts and hits on like they do on some wrestling shows. So this is going to be a real athletic event. It's going to be some really good wrestling. I can't wait to watch it. I'm going to be front row and center for the Debbie Malenko match. I'm very excited for that. And it's going to be great. You can still get tickets from the F4W Brown Paper Tickets website. You can find links on our Facebook page, or follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and all the links are there. I'm doing something new this time. FSW, who's like the host of the weekend, is setting up it's called FSW Network. It's where you can watch older shows that they put on after, a few weeks or whatever. And we are going to do the first live eye pay-per-view. I'm the experiment for them.
There you go.
And nice. So you can go to the fswnetwork.online, then click on pay-per-view, and then click on the picture for my show, and then you can order it. It's $10. It's $10 for some awesome fucking wrestling. You can't beat that price. And hey, I'd really appreciate it. People like, Garrett, you could go, you got your computer. Why don't you type up the address, order it, go to the Brown Paper Tickets, buy yourself, buy the Meltzer ticket, and let's lead by example there.
Well, we'll see. There's lots of stuff going on that day.
I will definitely buy your pay-per-view.
There we
Don't
go.
Worry about that. You've got a customer in me for sure.
There we
awesome.
Go.
Thank you.
So I'm talking about. Hey, Ed, thanks for doing this. Appreciate you, of course, creating the convention for everybody, and it's we hope to continue to do this for a very long time. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much wouldn't be co-hosting with Dave without me. You wouldn't have this whole network without me. And I'm curious, you and a lot of the people who are on your website know a legendary podcaster like myself, and no one's asked me to do a show, yet Paul, the worst podcast host in the history of the world, Fontaine, has like 20 of them. What's going on with that? We need to correct that.
Paul works hard, man. Paul works hard. He's a hard worker, and he's a good guy, but... You know, every time you do this, I always tell you to come on with me. So, you know, I'm a fan of yours.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time to let me come on here and show off my manly beard.
There we go. All right. Thanks, Ed. Hey, Ian, if that doesn't tell you to come out next year, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
Because that was a nice sell there.
That first convention he mentioned, that really just sounds more like five guys going to Las Vegas. But yeah, the rest of the convention sound really fun. It sounds like a good card he's put together for his show as well.
The convention has definitely evolved a bit. There is a dinner now. This all is sort of originated from Ed's idea and some collaboration, but now it's a little bit more standard. There's a Brazilian steakhouse dinner. There's a brunch. There's Ed's show. Brian and Dave's QA as well. And off stuff. Like people are like, oh, you want to go to karaoke? There's a karaoke bar that we've always gone to for over the years that I think people are attending. So tons of stuff going on. And it's just going to be a blast because we used to do it because UFC was running Memorial Day weekend. So we would all go to the UFC show and we'd sort of get together because of that. But now with Double or Nothing taking over the Memorial Day weekend in Vegas, UFC doesn't run anymore. So now it's based off of Double or Nothing. And the 2019 Double or Nothing show is one of the best wrestling shows I've ever been to. So I'm hoping that we get another good one. Okay, but less about that. We'll come back to it because Dave Meltzer is going to be scheduled to join us in the second half of this show. So if you have any questions, let us know. But Ian, getting back to you, tell us a little bit about what you do for the website and, where you come from and your fandom and all that. Give us the history of Ian Carey.
Right on. Well, I've been with the site for a little while. I've been employed by the site for since earlier this year, but I would do little things here and there, like I would do live results for different shows and stuff like that. I've been involved in wrestling writing for the last 10 years, but this was always where I really wanted to come to and do my work. In terms of my wrestling fandom, it starts really early on in my life. 1986, I was 6 years old. I was living in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Lance Storm usually throws in a dramatic pause there for it's Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I saw when Bruce Hart had brought back Stampede Wrestling. And so the first show that I went to, I was 6 years old. My parents took me, and it was Owen Hart and Muckin Singh in the main event that night. And Muckin Singh would later go on to be Bastion Booger in mm-hmm. WWE. He was like, but like at the time in Stampede Wrestling, he was like the top heel. It was Muckin Singh and Karachi Vice were the like the big heel stable in Stampede Wrestling at the time. So I got into shows like in Calgary, and then WWE would come from time to time, and we'd see like the Hart Foundation versus the British Bulldogs. And that was really cool to me to see like the Harts came out like on a Calgary house show with Calgary Flames jerseys on, and being like a 6 year old kid in Calgary, all like hockey and wrestling is everything. So when they combined that, I was like, wrestling is awesome. And eventually my family moved to Toronto and I would see some of the shows from Maple Leaf Gardens, which was really fun and really special. And that's how my fandom started. And I've just never wavered. I've loved wrestling ever since.
So are you following the hockey playoffs pretty closely right now?
Yeah, well, so the Leafs got eliminated by Tampa Bay, which I was a little upset about. But real hockey fans are loving what's happening in Alberta right now because you have the Battle of Alberta between the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. So that's really exciting for a lot of hockey fans.
All right. So
but I know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know we have to get some series out of the way. Like the Avalanche have to beat the Blues soon or otherwise Rampage is airing at like in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah,
so I'm cheering for the Avalanche so that doesn't happen.
We'll talk to Dave about that when he joins us. Okay, so your current wrestling, so you talked about, you know, as a kid, like, what kept you following wrestling? Because I think this is a fascinating question, because I imagine, you know, when we are younger, our friends are kind of into it, but at a certain point, a lot of people fall off. What kept you being a fan, and what kept you sticking around with pro wrestling until, you know, until current day today?
Well, there was a time where I almost fell out of it a little bit, and it would have been around 2006 after they brought back ECW and then killed it a second time. That my fandom wavered a little bit there, but in terms of like why I've continued to stay a fan for so many years, like 35 years now, it's just like wrestling is this mix of sports and like movies, and it's just got everything. But I think it's because I have so many positive memories of going to shows. Like it just seems like going to a wrestling show, you're surrounded by other people who like this kind of weird art form. Like wrestling is a strange thing, but people like to be around other people that really love it as much as you do, and you get to discuss it with them, you get to talk about what you like, what you don't like. It's an interesting community in the wrestling fandom world as well, and I think that's maybe what's always kind of kept me into it. But I was always that friend in my social circle who knew more about wrestling than everybody else. So they would come to me about, you know, because back in the day when dirt sheets and websites and all these things, like, they weren't as readily accessible. But my friends would come to me to find out what was going on in the world of wrestling. So I always enjoyed that as well.
You know, I've mentioned this before, but without the Observer, I probably fall off as a wrestling fan right around 93, 94. But Dave was writing for the National, which was a sports newspaper. And so I got a little bit of a taste of his stuff in that newspaper. But so in like 93, 94, it's starting to become really silly to me. I'm sort of growing out of it. But then Hogan goes to WCW, so that kind of reinvigorates me a little bit. But 96, 97, 98, when I finally realize what Dave is doing, that's when I get sucked back in. And then, obviously, great era, Austin Rock, those guys, Foley, that kept me there. But if not for the Observer, I probably would have jumped completely out of it like around 03, 04. Again, but because I was such a big fan of Dave's, and because of this community, because this community began in 05, I believe, it kind of is what kept me here. And, you know, I am still here after all of these years, thanks to Dave and thanks to this website and all of that. So,
yeah, I love the newsletter, and I've loved the newsletter for I don't even know how long now, but my favorite thing about it is just how thorough everything is. Like Dave does not leave anything out. If you read the, you know, one issue of the Observer, every single word of it, you know, everything that happened in wrestling that week. And I do think that like being able to keep track of promotions that maybe you're not able to see all the time, and being able to keep track of what's going on in, say, like Pro Wrestling NOAH, I don't get to see a lot, but there's always a section in the newsletter where you can find out what's going on in Pro Wrestling NOAH. So yeah, I bet the newsletter has kept a lot of people fans of wrestling when maybe they wouldn't have stayed fans otherwise.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is I started to see a different aspect of it, which is Dave will tell you, he is a business reporter. That is his trade.
Yeah.
And when you start looking at it from the standpoint of business, like if the, like, you know, there are so many moments where I'd be watching WWE and just be like, why am I watching this? Like, there's no reason for me to be watching this. But because of the business aspect of it, I was intrigued about, okay, so what does this mean for business? What is this horrendous television that I'm watching mean for business? You know, where are the stars? How are they going to build the next stars? What, you know, where's the TV money? And so all of these things, I started to get more into that because I'm also a fan of that stuff in other sports, you know? And so that really, really dialed me back in. And I'm almost more interested in that stuff today than the in-ring. Cause there's, you can watch a good, you can literally turn to anything wrestling related and find a good wrestling match in the ring. So we're sort of spoiled in that way. But the business stuff is kind of what I'm even more interested in.
Yeah, what got me more into the business side of things was after ECW closed down. I think maybe I just wanted to make sure that other promotions weren't about to go belly up. And so you learn about, like, okay, the TV rights deals and the ratings and
you know
things like that. And again, the newsletter is just so thorough on everything, especially the section that goes into the television ratings. It's just so great to be able to follow everything that's really happening in the industry aside from just the shows.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so you told me that you were kind of interested in some of these betting odds for Double or Nothing. And when Dave comes on, we'll do a little bit of a preview of some of the matches that everyone is looking forward to. But when you look at the odds, so if people want to check them out, they were in yesterday's daily update on the website. Is there anything that stands out to you that is interesting based on what you see in the odds here?
Yes, definitely. So I think a lot of people have said this, and you mentioned this on your show last week, or one of the shows, that this is one of the first AEW World Championship matches where the winner is kind of in doubt. Like, you're not exactly sure. Like maybe, probably CM Punk is going to win it. And so is it. Like, I think CM Punk is going to win it, but I'm not
I think Tony Khan definitely wants us to think Punk is winning this match, right?
Yeah, he might not, though. I mean, there's so many different scenarios that could happen. So they've got Punk listed as a minus 150 favorite. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was to have gone into this blind and said, like, okay, what odds would I put on it? I would have put Punk at, like, maybe a minus 200, maybe even a minus 300. Mm-hmm. But, like, minus 150, I mean, that's in the toss-up area, right? And then so you start to think, well, what are the different scenarios that could happen? So you've got two very popular wrestlers. The crowd is probably going to be, I would imagine, more into CM Punk if only for that live crowds always want to see a title change.
Yeah.
You know, so they want to be there when CM Punk becomes the champion. But AEW will also want to protect Hangman Page to a certain degree, right? So then you start thinking about, well, what could the finish of this match be? And there's so many different scenarios. Like, Page could win clean, and then Punk puts him over as the best wrestler currently. Punk could win clean, but then they could face off again sometime. Like, probably there will be some type of banana peel type situation that Hangman Page slips on, that Punk wins. But then another scenario, which I thought about, I'm not sure if it's that likely, but I thought about it. And it's Punk doing something sort of underhanded, maybe even a little heelish, to win the match. Hmm. And I don't know if that's likely, but I think it is possible.
Do you think the Forbidden Door pay-per-view has anything to do with your thought on who's going to win? Like, if that Forbidden Door pay-per-view wasn't already set in stone, I sort of feel like, oh yeah, then Hangman could totally win this, and then they go to the next pay-per-view and possibly do something else. But with the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, that kind of leads me to believe I'm a little bit more on the Punk side. But then again, maybe that's what Tony Khan wants us to think. And so I'm kind of wondering if that changes the trajectory for you.
Yeah, the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, I think, is going to factor heavily into this card. I was sort of interested in some of the comments CM Punk made on commentary during Hangman Page's match on Dynamite this week. I haven't heard anybody else talk about this, but after Hangman Page gave Takeshita the GTS, Punk said the words, "Some people get really mad when you do that move," which I think was directed towards Kenta, wasn't it?
Well, because Kenta's been very aggressive on social media in trying to get this match, and everything from Punk's side has been like, you know?
No, not into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not like, because Punk did that interview with comicbook.com. They mentioned Kenta calling him out on social media, said, "Are you interested in this match?" And it was just the one word answer, "No." And then I thought, okay, well, is this beef, you know, so big that they wouldn't, you know, actually have a match at Forbidden Door? And then I thought, well, maybe Punk is just sort of downplaying that because he wants people just thinking about his match with Hangman Page and not looking forward to a match with Kenta. But then Punk's, yeah, Punk's comments on commentary. He also said that he was the one that popularized the GTS, and he like really put emphasis on the popularized, as in, yeah, there was somebody who did it before me.
Yeah.
But it was popularized by CM Punk. I mean, that again was directed at Kenta. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if a future match between Punk and Kenta factors into this match between Punk and Hangman Page.
But how? Like, you do you think?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, okay. So here's another question: Do we think there's anybody from the New Japan side who will be part of this pay per view? Will be in Las Vegas this weekend to
create some
pathway there. That's something that I'm really interested in.
All of the top heavyweights in New Japan are available because they're just doing the best of the Super Juniors right now. So your top guys like Jay White, Okada, Tanahashi, they don't need to be in Japan until I think a bunch of them are going to be on the June 3rd card, the finals for the best of the Super Juniors. So they're available. And it would make sense to promote your next pay-per-view on this pay-per-view, especially because it's just going to be a month later, which for AEW is a small build. They're used to 3-month builds to their pay-per-view. So I would imagine they have to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What else? What else on the odds strikes your interest here a little bit?
So the odds on the Jade Cargill and Anna Jay match were interesting to me because there can't be anyone in the world who thinks that Anna Jay is going to win this match.
Yeah.
Nothing against Anna Jay, but Jade Cargill is not losing her first match to Anna Jay. And they've got her listed as a minus 1600 favorite, which obviously, of course, she's going to be a favorite. But I mean, both Holly Holm and Buster Douglas were longer shots than Anna Jay. And I just don't see any way where Anna Jay wins this match.
All right. We're going to stay talking Double or Nothing here in a second, but we're going to bring in Dave Meltzer to join us on this show. Dave and I are actually on the same flight headed to Vegas, and we didn't plan it that way. It just sort of happened. We're flying out of the same airport, so it just worked out. Dave, what's up?
Not too much. How you doing, Garrett?
Good. So I think the first question on everybody's mind is, how are you with the Observer? And doesn't sound like you jinxed yourself last night on Wrestling Observer Radio.
Everything's great. Nothing's happened today that jinxed me, so we'll have to wait.
Good. So you and I are flying out. We didn't plan it this way, but we're on the same flight on Friday. And I guess, you know, this whole thing of everyone getting back to Vegas, we get to do another Q&A. You and Brian are back doing a Q&A, doing the whole convention again. I don't know if you know this or if you remember this, but one of the first times that you and I really connected was at one of these conventions. And I think I want to say it was Randy Savage had like passed away, like not too long before the convention. And we had this giant ballroom dinner. And I think there were prizes given away. And you walked in.
Yep, I remember that. Yeah.
You walked in and you kind of looked around. And I looked at you and I just kind of waved. And then you just came right over and you sat next to me. And we talked for like 2 hours. Like that was like, I think the first time where I was like,
We had a long conversation. Yeah. We met before. We met at the Pat Tillman run. Yeah.
Yes.
But that was the first time we had a long conversation. And you started coming over. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Q&A that you and Brian are doing. These Q&As are, you would think that you'd sort of get the same questions over and over and over and over again, but
That never happens.
No, I'm always fascinated at how smart these questions are. And I guess I shouldn't be because it just means that you have a pretty smart audience. But then, you know, sometimes there's even a surprise. Last time we did it, Chris Harrington showed up.
He had a really good question. He was very interesting. He was looking for, ideas for international growth because that's where obviously the company's very far behind WWE when it comes to international growth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was one that we did in San Francisco. There was an ROH. Was it who showed up from ROH?
It was the New Japan show, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Young Bucks have come by. Joe Koff has come by.
That's who it was. Maybe you're talking about Joe Koff. Yeah, I think it was
Joe Koff walked in the middle of the thing. And, you know, yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. Maybe someone does a run in there. And then also the Q&A, or I'm sorry, not the Q&A, the meet and greet with you and Brian. So if people want to get their stuff signed or just get a picture with Dave and Brian, that will happen at the meet and greet. Okay, so
that might be sold. Is that sold out yet? I thought that one was sold out.
Yeah, it might be sold out. So you mentioned this on Wrestling Observer Radio as well, which is early start for Rampage. So we're literally going to get in, we're going to put our bags down, probably get lunch, and we're already on the way to Rampage because it's such an early start. 3:30?
Right. It's a 3 o'clock start for the show, and then Rampage itself will start at 3. We'll run from 3:30 to 4:30, which will either be live if there's a Colorado Rockies St. Louis Blues game, or it will be on tape. If there is no hockey game, and it would then air at 10 o'clock Eastern, the normal time slot. And then the countdown will air after Rampage. If there is no hockey game, if there is a hockey game, the countdown show will air after the hockey game. So that's the Friday schedule. There's two AEW shows Friday as far as TV goes.
Do we know if, like, I mean, it's their last attempt. It's the go-home show to Double or Nothing. Do you expect anything big to happen on that Rampage show?
Yes, I would expect something big to happen. I don't know. No one's told me it. I'm just thinking, like, you know, it's not like I've talked to Tony Khan and he goes, oh, something big's going to happen. But I do kind of know Tony Khan's booking patterns, and you're going to do something big in the final show. That's, you know, Wednesday and Friday. I'm sure that there'll be big promos, big, you know, it's going to be big hard sell Wednesday and Friday with stuff to build the pay-per-view.
And is there any update on the Paige Van Zandt match that I think you said on Sunday that as far as people know, it's on the card, but was there any update to that?
I mean, I had heard over the weekend, because I'd asked around about Paige, and I was told, you know, she's going to be back soon. But people said, yeah, she's supposed to be in the mixed tag, and they've certainly hinted it on TV. It's the match that they want. Then they said it was off. Then Sammy said, you're going to have to give me the match we want. I mean, it was the match planned. If there was a snafu, you know, that happens, you know, maybe it's changed, or maybe it'll be moved because they have so many matches on the show already. I don't know, but I know it was the match. I know that match was planned for this pay-per-view. Yes.
I wonder if anything gets moved to Friday, like when they sort of time out the show and go, oh, you know, maybe we'll just move this to Friday. You know how WWE does that with WrestleMania?
WWE does that, but they, yeah. they've never done that. Now, they could move something to the following Wednesday, I suppose, mm-hmm. You know, because you want something big coming off of the pay-per-view. So that's possible. But I don't recall them ever actually moving a match off the pay-per-view. They've, you know, not saying that it will never happen, but they run a lot of pay-per-views and they've never done it yet. So it's not like one of those things where I look at and go, oh, they can always do this. Whereas with WWE, you know, when it comes to WrestleMania, there's always timing issues at WrestleMania because they time it at the last minute. I think Tony has a better grasp of timing, honestly, than WWE does. That's the difference.
Okay, so we're going to come back to Double or Nothing because I want to go through some of the matches and get both your and Ian's thoughts on the card. But what's the story? I read somewhere where they were putting together some timelines for The Rock, and someone had written that they think that Rock is fairly open in his movie production schedule for WrestleMania. What have you heard about that?
Nothing new. I mean, same thing I always hear. You know, if he can do it, he'll do it. And no one knows. No one's probably going to know until late this year whether he can or he can't. But I mean, it's sort of the, you know, kind of like the penciled idea of the main event. Yeah.
Because I was looking up, he's got the Black Adam movie coming out. And I was kind of wondering with the release date, and it looks like it's going to be this fall. So that won't be an issue. But, you know, and then how does the XFL play into this? You think?
The XFL. I mean, because he's going to have to train. He's going to have to run the football league. You know, I don't know. It's another thing on his plate, though. And a big thing, too, you know, because it's starting, what, February, which is and the season would be going, and they'd be in the latter stages of the season, or maybe the playoffs at that point. So, you know, that would be a big deal. And the XFL could be, you know, I don't know what, you know, two spring football leagues. You know what I mean? I just looked at the USFL ratings this morning, and they're not that great, to say the least.
I've not watched 1 second of USFL football. And I was a giant fan of it when I was a kid. The original USFL with all those college stars who went to the USFL. Yeah, I haven't watched a second of it. It just hasn't even been on my radar.
The cable ratings are really weak. NBC, I mean, the network ratings are weak for network ratings, but they're low. I mean, the cable ratings are much, 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 much lower than like NXT, put it that way. I mean, not even in the same ballpark, like less than half. And then, the network numbers are, they're still not very good for network numbers.
But there's a vested interest with Fox, right? Because they...
Yeah. They own the league and everything, and they'll probably keep it alive. And, again, when you think that the future is live sports, you're going to give the thing a chance to survive. You know, Vince, whatever reason Vince was for bailing early, he didn't see a future in it. That was the thing. And Dwayne saw, a chance. And I don't know, I'm surprised we don't know the ESPN deal numbers, because obviously if it's successful or not, depends almost entirely on that ESPN deal. If they got enough money for it, then they're, whatever. Then he made the deal that WWE couldn't make, because Vince was trying to get money for the league for television, and he was turned down by everyone. Then Dwayne comes in. If Dwayne got, decent money for the league, he made a deal Vince couldn't make, and that's the difference between success and failure.
Yeah, I listened to John Oren's podcast from the Sports Business Journal. And I'm waiting for him to tweet something, to say something, because they definitely left that information out of that press release.
Yeah.
So one more thing about The Rock. I'm trying to think of, him being able to tie in WWE to some of these other things that he's doing. XFL, the Young Rock show. I'm not surprised that they picked that show up, but I watched some of those shows that were on the same time as on NBC, and it was my least favorite one. I liked Mr. Mayor and the Kenan show way better than Young Rock, but they picked up Young Rock. So do you think there's going to be any synergy with him coming back to WWE, Young Rock, the XFL? It would seem that he could use, part of the deal maybe, if I'm going to come back to WWE, like that other stuff needs to be a big part of it.
As far as them promoting his other things, well, first of all, the Young Rock, they will probably promote, but it's hard because Young Rock next season goes head to head with SmackDown. So it's kind of like that makes it real tricky. As far as WWE promoting the XFL as a return for him doing it, I'm sure that they would. I would suspect he would ask for it, and I can't imagine them not saying sure.
All right, Ian and I were talking about some of these odds for Double or Nothing matches, and I'm kind of interested in what you think about CM Punk and Adam Page. CM Punk is -150, Adam Page is a +110, so very close to even odds. If you were to bet, who do you have winning this match?
If I was to bet, I say Punk. If I was to book it, I would say, I think I've talked about this before, I would have Page win the first one and Punk win the second one, and make the second one enough of a dispute where you come back in Chicago, have the title win in Chicago, because Page would get a lot of credibility for a win. And, Punk should be champion, but I think that I like it better with Paige getting the first win, just because Paige is the future of the company, not Punk. So you want to do something, and then, they can go 1-1 and Punk could get his run, because, the Punk run where he wrestles Moxley and Danielson and Kenny Omega and Paige again and, other people. To me, that's a big money run as a champion. But you want to keep, you want Paige to be not like a guy who carried the belt, between Omega and Punk, but a guy who, is like a real champion who could win it at any time, that they do it again. Enough of a, even if he's losing, really work on that finish hard with the idea that he could have won.
If Page wins the first one, when does Punk Page 2 take place? Do you wait to the next pay-per-view? Do you do it before Forbidden Door?
I would for sure do it in Chicago if All Out is in Chicago. If All Out is not in Chicago, I would wait until, you know, then I would probably do Revolution in, or maybe Revolution in Chicago or Full Gear in Chicago, whenever the next Chicago pay-per-view date is, right, would be the date, right, I would do it. And I think I mean again, the tradition is All Out. He wants to keep tradition up. But you know, they haven't confirmed All Out for Chicago, but if you go with the idea that it will be Chicago, that would be the show that I would have him win it at.
Okay.
And you would think that they would have to run the bigger building for that show, right? If that's your main event.
Yeah, I would think so too. I don't think that there will be any, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, you don't want the ill will of leaving the market, but I don't think that there will be, and the tradition, but I think if you move the tradition from the Now Arena to the United Center, especially since the company has grown, and make the tradition the United Center, I don't think that anyone in Chicago is going to complain about, you know, well, we, you know what I mean? Like, we have this tradition here and you ruined it. You know, it's still Chicago market. So, but yes, if they do that, I would say book the United Center too.
All right. So looking at this card, we're going to have so many different shows to kind of preview the matches and such. I'm kind of interested in both of your opinions on what the match of the night may be. Now, I was surprised to hear Brian Alvarez say he thought House of Black and Death Triangle could be the match of the night. Now, I'm not surprised because of, you know, I think that match is going to be good, but when you have Hangman and Punk on this show, I'm like, man, for House of Black and Death Triangle to be better than that, that's a high, high bar. But Dave, what do you think will be the best match on this show, or at least the one that has piqued your interest the most?
The one, I mean, the main event would probably have my most interest, and it could be the best match because, you know, Punk is going to, you know, probably work the hard, you know, as hard as he can, and Paige is very, very talented, and you got the high stakes. When I look on paper, I mean, the two matches that I kind of think might be the best might be the 10-man anarchy match or the tag team title three-way, because I look at the tag team title three-way and just the way those people match up. Now, it may not have the interest level, so it may not get the heat of the other ones, but I look at those participants and the way that they match up and bounce off each other and things, and I think that you could put together an incredible match because of the talent of the guys. You know, the Young Bucks and Hardys, the Young Bucks are always in contention for a best match when it's on a pay-per-view. And the question is what do the Hardys have left? But the other one, the Anarchy match, I mean, you got Moxley and Danielson and, you know, Eddie Kingston and Jericho's pretty much a genius when it comes to match layout. And, you know, I think that there's a lot, you know, when you have that kind of match, it'll either be unwieldy and too much because they don't rein it in, Or it will be an absolutely outstanding match because of the talent of enough of the guys in there. So those would be the other matches. But I mean, I look at that show and most of the show looks really, really, really good. And like the Death Triangle match should be, you know, a sensational match. They've already done it. We've already seen it once. It was great then without Phoenix. You add Phoenix to that match, that only is elevating the match.
So I was actually wondering about that Anarchy match, and I think I mentioned this to you on Wrestling Observer Radio. That's going to be a match that I'm going to have to go back and figure out to watch on television, because live there, I imagine there's going to be several different things going on around the ring or outside, you know, and it's going to be, you know, I'm kind of anxious, like going, oh man, what am I going to pay attention to? Like, I'm going to miss stuff. Mm-hmm. But that may be a match that I just, you know what, I'm going to have to go back and watch it on TV. But do you think, because of the fact that they have so much talent, the way that they've created matches for this card is like a lot of multiple person matches? You know, they're 10 people in one match. I understand why, but I kind of wonder, like, is this going to be what they have to do to get all of these people on these shows, is, you know, less one-on-one matches except for the most important ones, and then we're just sort of combining people into storylines that make sense, but, you know, we just have to have all these multi-person matches so that we get all of these folks on TV.
Yes, well, on the pay-per-view. Yes, well, look, FDR's not on the pay-per-view, you know, and so yeah, there's, and they've got two sets of tag team titles, and they, you know, they've had some of the hottest matches, that 1 week where they had those two great tag team matches. So it's like, you know, there's way too much talent for one pay-per-view. I mean, they're actually, and I'm not suggesting this, I don't think this is the right thing for them. Although at some point it may be where you do the WWE WrestleMania thing and you do the weekend where you do the Saturday and the Sunday pay-per-view, maybe for one of the pay-per-views a year, and then you really load up. I mean, because they have a roster where you can pull that off better than WWE, really, when it comes to a roster to be able to do a deep show of great matches. And so that may be something down the road. But yeah, I mean, you're going to have people, you know, that are top guys not on the pay-per-view because there is so much talent on that roster.
I want to give Ian a chance to ask a question.
Okay. So you mentioned that like FTR isn't going to be on the show, but I wanted to know what you think like we're going to see in terms of promoting the Forbidden Door pay-per-view for next month. Are we going to see some New Japan guys show up to help promote that show?
You mean surprise run-ins and stuff? I hope so.
Yeah, something like that.
Let me see.
And they're really good at that, right? they're excellent.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, when that show is over, you should know two or three of the top matches for Forbidden Door. So yeah, like if Punk wins, should, you know, Tanahashi, Okada, Takagi, somebody, you know, walk on stage.
Kenta, maybe.
Yes. Kenta, yeah. If it's, you can't, yeah, whatever, if Kenta's healthy. And if Paige wins, should somebody walk on stage? Yeah, like a top New Japan guy walk on stage at the end of the show. Absolutely, 100%. I don't know if they've worked that out, but yes. And in the tag team situation, should that happen? I mean, you should have, you know, maybe after the 10-man tag, somebody comes out and challenges Danielson, you know, like Zach or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. But whatever matches they have lined up, they should have like the top three or four of them teased on the pay-per-view. I mean, if it's at all possible, and I mean, they absolutely should do that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw kind of an angle there with Fish and O'Reilly and Sting and Darby Allin. Is there anything maybe listed for them being added to the show?
No, but that's another one. You know, you got right now, you have no Darby Allin match. You have no Fish and O'Reilly match. Unless O'Reilly ends up in the finals of the Owen Hart thing. But obviously that match will happen and probably on TV. I don't see it on Forbidden Door, and going to All Out seems to be too long. So I think that maybe yeah, that's building for a television match.
All right, so business indicators for this show, how well we think this show is going to do. Obviously, the sort of the peak was what was All Out, like when it came to interest and all of the surprises kind of bubbling at the right time. But do you still feel like they're at the point in pay-per-view where, you know, growth and we don't have really a great comparison to last year, because that was still... I think that was the first show out of the pandemic, right, where they finally were able to have the live fans there at the outdoor place. But do you have any sense of, you know, where you expect this show to be pay-per-view buys wise?
Some of it depends on if there's an NBA game on that day, because that would hurt if there is. But I mean, I kind of feel about the same as the last one, you know, which was 170, which was a good number. So I guess if I'm going to guess, you know, the last one was so great on paper and ended up being so great as far as match quality goes. But this one does have a pretty strong main event. I mean, granted, you know, Punk and MJF was a big grudge, but this is Punk going for the championship. So again, I feel it should be as strong as the last one. Maybe it'll even be stronger, but my gut is, yeah, if you're going to ask me like a number, I'm going to guess 170.
And then what was the last show?
170.
Okay. And then what was All Out?
205.
Okay. So, I mean, that's still a very, very strong number. Okay. So, folks who are going to be in Las Vegas with us, can't wait to see all of you and meet some new folks. Andrew and I are going to do a pre-sweet party episode of We're Live Pal. We don't have a set time yet, but just stay tuned to, you know, whatever social media channels and our Twitters and everything, and you will find that out. But thank you, Dave, for doing this. Thank you, Ian, for being the co-host here and for jumping in. And I think you filled Andrew's shoes, except for the hair part. I think you filled them extremely well. But yeah, so thank you to both of you. I'm Double G. We'll see you in Vegas. Peace out.